Well, good morning to everyone. Hope that you're all settling in fine, getting over jet lag and getting a good night's sleep. You know, over here, when they can't get sleep, they don't count sheep. I don't see any sheep around. You know what they do count? You got it, chickens. Maybe roosters, but that's for getting up in the morning. Plenty of those around. Mankind, made in God's image, all kinds of people, just like you and me, of all ages, of all the nations, of all the races, all down through time, have dreamed of a better world, longing for meaning and purpose in life, striving for success and happiness. And time and time and time again, those dreams have been dashed, ending in great disappointment. Without dreams and those dreams coming true, life ends with great disappointment, even despair. We all have dreams, don't we? How we want our lives to go in this physical life and on into the beyond, into eternity. Whether we're 70 years of age and older, or we're midlife, or maybe we're a young single in our 20s, or a teenager, life is very important to us, and our goals and dreams coming true, even to someone that's 12 years of age and younger. We all have dreams and goals and aspirations. What are yours? Are you fully awake to them? Do you have a clear vision of your goals and your dreams and where you're going in life? This life gets very, very busy at times, especially in the Western world. It gets very, very hectic. The society about us, the world about us, drives us, pushes us, and sometimes we can be very easily distracted. We live in an age of tolerance and apathy, characteristics of a dying civilization. Definition of apathy is absence or suppression of passion, emotion, excitement, coolness, indifference, just the opposite of a young child. You look at a young child and the sparkle in their eyes, the zest for life, for adventure, for exploration. Christ said to look to the children. I'd like to address this subject of being fully awake to our dreams, and I'll qualify that as I go on in the message. Before I came a part of the church, when I was at the young age of 19, I was going about life, minding my own, doing my own thing. I had my own goals and dreams to pursue. I wanted to get married, have a family, have a good career, be successful, enjoy life, have a good life just like everybody else wants to have. This was in the late 60s, and there were many young people at that time that wanted to be some kind of a music star. And certainly in the 60s, music revolutionized the United States and the entirety of the world. Music is very powerful. So, whether they wanted to be a music star or a sports star or some kind of star, if you can become that, then it's instant success. Fame and fortune, recognition, respect, admiration, even attaining true love. That's the perception today. Not much has changed. We have many of those musical shows today, American Idol, The Voice. People want to make a difference. They want to change the world. The decade of the 60s was filled with turmoil in both the United States and the rest of the world. The Vietnam War, the 67 Middle East War, communism was spreading in Southeast Asia, assassinations in the United States, campus riots. Those are only some of the troubles that were occurring at that particular time. Not much has changed, has it? Things have only gotten worse. I began to see the reality of life. All those problems in the world, I became very disillusioned. I began to give up on my own dreams. What's the use? The world's falling apart. I felt like Solomon in Ecclesiastes. I saw the futility of life, the futility of history, and all the evils all the time on this planet. And then one day, everything changed. My life changed forever. I heard a bold voice on radio and television make the statement that the solution to all the world's problems was world government. A super world ruling government, but not in the hands of man, because that would be an absolute nightmare. And that's what man has yet to experience. But government in the hands of God. And unless Christ returned to stop the madness, there would be no flesh saved alive. No other solution. I saw that. I had a fear of what was coming. I did something about it. I didn't want to perish with the rest of the world. World government, that the government would be on Christ's shoulders. Well, if there's a government, then there must be laws and territory. I'd never heard this before. I'd never heard the connection between God and government. I went to a mainstream Protestant church with my mother and brother and sister. I had relatives of a certain fundamental religion that believed in a kingdom, and they tried to convert me, but it came across like a religious Disneyland. Didn't relate, didn't connect with me. Wasn't relevant to the times and the problems that were happening on the world at that particular time. But the word government, the usage of that language, electrified my young mind. It resonated. It made sense. I wanted to be a part of that. I wanted to be a part of the solution and make a difference and to help change the world, not only in the future, but now in the present. My own personal goals became very small, very insignificant, because the great Creator God came along and He gave to little old me and to you a vision of His dreams. His plan, and His dreams and His plan are very, very big. Are those dreams still very, very big to us as they were when we first became a part of the church? When I came into the church, I was a young man. I had a lot of zeal. I thought it was my zeal. It wasn't. It was what God gave, that first love. And there's been so many times through life and the ups and downs and the trials and difficulties that you have to pick yourself up off the floor and ask God to give you that zeal again that you had when you first came into the church. You know, sometimes we can just say, oh, I know all that. I've heard it before. Let's go to 2 Peter 1. See what we have been given by God. 2 Peter 1, beginning in verse 3. As His divine power has given to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of Him who called us out, who called us by glory and virtue, by which have been given to us exceedingly great and precious promises. Indeed, what is the magnitude of what God has given to us, these promises? Are they in the forefront of our minds every single day, or are they somewhere tucked at the back? Who are we? What is our identity? Well, we're God's people. We're God's church. If you look up that word in a dictionary, it's defined as a building, a service, a religious institution, a body of believers. Everything but the true definition. And we know that from the Greek, the word ekklesia means called out. Called out ones. That's our true identity of who we are. We dare not forget that. Nations have forgotten their identity, haven't they? The United States and Britain. We've been called out. Called out of what? 2 Corinthians 4. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 4. Very basic scriptures. Verse 3, we'll start in verse 3. But even if our gospel is veiled or hid, it is veiled to those who are perishing. They're going down a path that is leading to destruction and death unless there's some intervention of some sort. Verse 4, whose minds the God, small g, but God refers to this being as God. The God of this age, the God of this world has blinded the minds of every human being, basically. One of the most shocking scriptures I came across when I first came into the church was Revelation 12:9, that the whole world is deceived. I couldn't believe that. It just didn't seem possible. And then Matthew 24, that all of nominal Christianity was also deceived. That also was just staggering to me at the time. But we have been called out of this world that is Satan's world, out of its thinking, out of its attitudes, out of its approaches. All that is in the world, as we read in 1 John 2, the self, what the flesh wants, what the eyes want, and the pride of life. All about self. And that includes religious pride, which is probably the most destructive of all. The Pharisees had that. I'm saved. I'm good. I'm okay. I'm better. I know. Religious superiority and competition. The world can look so good at times. Sometimes it doesn't look that bad. But it is a deadly mixture of a little bit of good with a whole lot of evil mixed together. The God of this world was at one time named Lucifer, meaning light bringer, truth bringer. Today he is the lie bringer. Deception, distortion, half-truths, propaganda, hypocrisy, all throughout this world. All that is in the world, all the institutions of this age, religious, political, educational, business, cultural, entertainment, all the ideologies, philosophies, all of it. It's all his, except for the called out ones, you and me. We're called to a new world, a new government, an empire, a kingdom, whatever you make a connection with, a new way of life. What's our dream or dreams? Are they of this world, or are they God's dreams, his plan? Is it still to make a difference, not only in the future, but now? Or has it become only about personal salvation, saving oneself, saving one's own? The only way to tell that is by one's works and attitude, which God says he knows. In Revelation 2 and 3, he says, I know your works, and I know your attitude. What has God given the ecclesia, the called out ones, to do? The mission now. The work. The works. Now here we are at the feast, just beginning to enjoy ourselves, rejoicing and feasting, portraying the future. And we're staying in very fine temporary dwellings. And that's good. That's what God intends. And when we go home, we will go home to fine homes as well, in comparison to the majority that live on this planet. Latest UN estimates came out this summer that there are over 50 million people that are displaced in this world at this present time because of war, because of diseases, because of natural disasters and other factors. That's a population greater than the population of Canada, which is about 35 million, more like the population of South Korea. These people are truly living in temporary dwellings, in shacks, in tents, in rain, in mud, in snow. Sad to see when you see this on television, on the news. Who is this feast all about? Is it about them, or is it about us? It's about us serving them. That's what it's supposed to be about. If we can in some way now in this age, and certainly primarily that is disseminating knowledge and truth and preaching the gospel, the good news of God's coming government as a witness to the nations, even a witness against, but certainly in the future, to serve those in the millennium and in the white throne judgment. That's God's vision. That's his dream, to bring to them fine physical homes where there's safety and security and peace, prosperity, and to bring them, more importantly, to a spiritual home that's safe and secure and permanent, to bring God's dream to them. When God looks down at this planet, what does he see? Does he only see firstborn, or second, third, or fourth? When we look at our children, do we only see the firstborn, or do we see all of them? The answer is obvious. God is not just focused on us, is he? Every last single human being that has ever lived is extremely important to God. My mother and father were never called in this age, part of the church. They're both gone now. My mother died a year and a half ago at the age of 90. I will have to wait over 1,000 years to see them again. That's a long, long time. I can hardly wait. I dream dreams about that day. I can hardly wait. I want to be there in that cemetery when they're raised. They did so much for me through life to be able to bring them the knowledge of the truth and of God's plan will be a dream come true for me. Let's go to Acts 2. Acts 2, the day of Pentecost, most historic events in history. Acts 2 and verse 14. But Peter, standing up with the 11, raised his voice and said to the men of Judea and all who dwell in Jerusalem, let it be known to you and heed my words. Verse 16. But this is what was spoken by the prophet Joel. And it shall come to pass in the last days. Are we living in the last days? Much more so than Peter was. That I will pour out my spirit on all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. Your young men shall see visions. Your old men shall dream dreams. And on my men servants and on my maid servants, I will pour out my spirit in those days, and they shall prophesy. Your old men shall dream dreams. My father had a lot of health problems in the last years of his life, including Parkinson's. Very debilitating and humiliating. All his dreams were shattered. I look to the time when he can walk again, talk again, and eat again, because he couldn't. You know, most old men in this world, in this society, when they get to be old, don't have much to dream about. The vigor of youth is gone, usually a number of health issues, and no knowledge of what your life was all about, or where life is going, or how it'll end up. Not so for the called out ones, the seniors in God's church, the elderly, who are just a sterling example of purpose and vitality, living each day to the full, because they know the future. They have a dream. They dream dreams. What burns in our heart every day? Yes, we have physical goals and dreams in this physical life, and those are important, but they shouldn't overshadow what we've been called to, not only now, but in the future. Let's go to Isaiah 61. Very important prophecy. Isaiah 61 and verse 1. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me. That Spirit was upon Jesus Christ when he was on this planet. That Spirit is upon him at this time. That Spirit should be on us, the called out ones, at this particular time. Because the Lord has anointed me to preach good tidings to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are bound, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to console those who mourn in Zion, to give them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garments of praise for the spirit of heaviness. There is so much heaviness on the face of this earth right now. What have we been called to do now? That everything that we do in this life should conform to our preparation for that responsibility that we will have in the future. That we're conscious every morning that we're being educated and trained when we pray, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done." We shouldn't be shocked or overwhelmed by trials because we know that they're for our good. They are necessary for our training, our preparation, that we should accept patiently and with complete trust in looking to God, because we know that God is with us every step of the way. Let's look at Abraham's example briefly. Genesis 12. Genesis 12. Verse 1. Now the Lord said to Abram, who initiated this? It was God. God called Abraham to something very great. Get out of your country, from your kindred, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you and will curse him who curses you, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And in chapter 17, God changed that to being a father of nations, plural. What do you think that did to Abraham's mind? Oh, well, that's kind of interesting. No, I don't think so. I believe it was a jolt to his thinking and his emotions that motivated him to prepare for that great responsibility in the future. Abram had never seen those nations, did he? His first glimpse will be at the resurrection. And I believe that he will be shocked at the breadth and the scope of how greatly God blessed him. Of those nations, one of those nations became the single greatest power on the face of the earth through all of history. And you and I have the privilege to live in it. Wealth, power, military might. Another one of those nations with a great company of nations. The greatest empire that the world has ever seen. I think Abraham will be astounded. Abraham knew that there would not only be nations that came from him, but that someday he would oversee them and help bring all his descendants into the family of God. That vision that God gave him was the driving force and motivation for the rest of his life that enabled him to go through all the trials and the tests in preparation for that great responsibility, which he accepted with faith and patience. What if Abraham had been indifferent, apathetic? What if Abraham had said no to that calling? No reward. No reward. Abraham and Sarah never lived in a structure, in a building, a fine home. They lived in tents their whole life. As they sojourned, as they prepared for that rulership in that world-ruling government. Do we underestimate what God has in mind for us at the resurrection? Let's go to Revelation 2. Revelation 2 and verse 26. And he who overcomes and keeps my works until the end, to him I will give power over the nations. And he shall rule them with a rod of iron, as the potter's vessel shall be broken to pieces. Does that jolt your mind yet? Or is that, oh, I know that, I've heard that before. Over the nations, just like Abraham will be over nations. A rod of iron. This is a starting point. There are several facets of rulership, leadership. But first and foremost, all evil must be stopped, dead in its tracks, subdued. Before there can be any education, any kind of re-education, it has to be stopped. Just as ancient Egypt had to be stopped of conquering and enslaving people, so must all nations that war and enslave be stopped. Where would you start in the Middle East today if you were in charge of Libya, Syria, Iraq? Do you think many would listen to what you have to say? Or would you have to get their attention first? But there's far more to rulership and leadership than just using force. Here are other aspects of that, some synonyms. To reign, to have authority, dominion, jurisdiction, to govern, to set an order, to manage, to oversee, to guide, to lead, to shepherd, to serve, to nurture, to educate, to teach, to rescue, to save, to deliver, to release from bondage, to heal physically, to heal the brokenhearted, to restore, to renew, to befriend, to make your brother, to welcome into the family of God. Does that come into your mind every single morning as you begin your day? This calling that we have is by special invitation only. And it's only going to a few at this time. To the first fruits. Rulership with Christ. Inheriting all things that are Christ's. To be at his side with him all the time. If you were to inherit the island of Kauai, you personally, what would you do with it? How would you manage it? How would you oversee it? I'd start with the roads right quick. And I'd up the speed limit. And I'd make the chicken the state bird. And have lots of barbecues. Put Colonel Sanders out of business. What is in the forefront of God's mind above all else right now? It's to restore his government to this planet. And that involves us. Romans 8. Romans 8, verse 21. Because the creation, the whole creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption, from slavery, into the glorious liberty of the children of God, God's government, which we'll be a part of it, God willing. For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now. Another UN estimate that came out recently that there are 30 million people on this planet right now living in slavery. More than at any time in all of history. And 20% are children. Do you want to fix it? Do you want to fix the problems? When you listen to the news, it can hardly take it, all the revolting things that you hear day after day. You just want to fix it right now. We don't have much power right now, do we? All that we can fix is our own life and change that. And that's a difference. We can make a big difference. There have been people that God has worked with who made huge difference, even in this world. Joseph was one example. Esther was another. Moses, certainly. But just think of it. Someday we'll have a chance to make a difference, a big difference, and to fix it, to change the world and to usher in a new age and turn this earth into a paradise, just like the island that we're living on right now. All the beauty and the abundance on this beautiful island. To make the whole planet into that. And create that for all the teeming masses of humanity throughout time whose dreams have been shattered. To deliver them, to release them from the bondage of corruption, from enslavement, and to welcome them and to lead them to the family of God. To make all of their dreams come true. You know, we see God's plan in just bits and pieces. But when we will see it all together, put all together at the resurrection, what God is doing. God has worked with hundreds of thousands. I don't know how many will be in that government, maybe even into the millions. But there will be individuals who have been trained and tested and perfected and made into this balanced, cohesive power, ready to go to work, who are righteous and to solve all the problems on this planet. What's your dream every single day? This is God's dream. You know, when we were first called, we were awakened, weren't we? To a dream that ignited some great something inside of us that we wanted to be a part of. We had that zeal, and we have this feast, and the opportunity now to rekindle some of that zeal. And just as God was with Abraham his entire life, every single step of the way, God will be with us. As he prepared Abraham for that great responsibility, he will be with each and every one of us, preparing us to rule over the nations. Doesn't matter whether you're 80 years of age, 40, 20, 15 years of age, or 12 and younger, God is concerned about everyone in this room and preparing them for this grand future. Let's close in Genesis 15. Genesis 15, verse 1. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, "Do not be afraid." And oh, how many times we're afraid. Abraham was. God says, "Don't be." Appreciate greatly Mr. Dowd's sermon yesterday about fear. Something that we all deal with and have to work through. God says, "Fear not. Don't be afraid. I am your shield." And we think, you know, shield, sword, ancient times. How about a civil defense shield the nation of Israel has? The Iron Dome that wards off those rockets as they're coming in. That God is able to ward off anything that Satan fires at us. Not only intercept it, but destroy it. And then God says, "I am your exceedingly great reward." What is God going to give to us if we endure to the end? Eternal life. Eternal youth. Eternal happiness. Eternal accomplishment. Rulership. At Christ's side forever, married to Christ. That's the short list. There's so much more. You could go on and on and on, but that's the short list. What a tremendous future that God is offering to each and every one of us in this room, if we are fully awake to it.